Well, on Tuesday, March 22nd, the 2016 Lake Superior shipping season commenced with toots and salutes between the Edwin H. Gott and the Duluth-famed Ariel Highbridge. The return of the Lakers and Salties on the horizon of Superior is brought to us by our local experts in exports, imports, and port operations, the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. Our next guest, Adele Yorde, is the Public Relations Director for the Port Authority and provides the strategic and creative leadership for the port's public relations, advertising, media, and government relations. She's the perfect person to talk about the big boats on the big lake with us. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Adele.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Yes, and happy season opener.
Thank you.
Do you feel like you're a member of a pro sports team when it's all begun?
I do. Who's lining up? Who's in the batter's box? And who's going to hit the home run this weekend?
Yes, well, every ship's a player. And tell us about the first one out.
Well, the first one out, I think for any of us who consider ourselves boat nerds and anywhere working in the waterfront, it was very exciting. It was just after 4 a.m. on Tuesday morning. And the Edwin H. Gott sailed out. She was on her way to two harbors, actually, where she was going to load iron ore pellets, and ended up being the first in line for the downbound crew this morning when the Sioux Locks opened just after midnight.
So she's leading the race.
She was leading the downbound crew, and the Roger Blau was first in the queue on the upbound side, and she actually was the very first vessel that went through the Sioux Locks shortly after 1 a.m.
Excellent. Excellent, Adele. Well, if you could tell us just how big a deal is the Port of Duluth and Superior?
Well, you know, our claim to fame is we get called the Great Lakes Cargo Capital because we move about 38 million tons of cargo every year through this port, which is the most on all of the Great Lakes. What we move is heavy and of great value. It's the iron ore, the limestone moves in through here. Low-sulfur coal from the Powder River Basin in Montana and Wyoming is an outbound cargo, not to mention all the grain that moves out from the upper Midwest, mostly North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota, as well as some inbound shipments of cement and salt, which is so valuable in typical winters here. And we get a lot of project cargo that moves across our Port Authority, the Clear Public Marine Terminal. So all of those big, huge, heavy components for wind turbines and oil and gas exploration and heavy equipment for the mining industry. So it's a real mix of cargoes, and it keeps it interesting, especially for the people that line the ship canal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, talk about a spinoff or a tourism industry that's got to be value-added. I mean, you guys are out there doing what you do either way, but yet these crowds at Canal Park and the High Bridge, you know, how big of an effect is that on your image and your marketing and your team?
Well, we always say that the ships don't come to see the tourists. The tourists come to see the ships. And so, you know, I think that this whole, the reason that this harbor is such a mecca for tourism is that it's visible all along the highway as you come into Duluth, either from the north, from your end of the world, or from the south, the tourists that flood in from the Twin Cities in the summer and Iowa and Illinois and parts further. We get an awful lot of people in, and the activity in the harbor is so visible. You can watch it come out, a ship come all the way in the canal, and you can see it turning and heading to the particular terminal in the harbor. There are an awful lot of ports where the actual industrial activity takes place almost up and in a channel and away from view. So the fact that you can watch almost 900 vessel visits or more a year come in and out that ship canal in all seasons and all kinds of weather really do make it a draw down in that canal park area.
But that just happened to be a coincidence, right? There was no foresight in that design.
You know, I think it was a utilitarian design, where to put the ship canal, how to get it in and turn, because the ships were a lot smaller when that design was made. And we also have another entry in the Superior entry, which is a much more natural entry. And we do have several vessels that come in on that side to load iron ore pellets over at the ore dock in Superior. So we're unique in that we're the only port on the Great Lakes Seaway system that actually has two entrances to come in. And so anybody that's out in their kayaks or their recreational vessel fishing, if they are, can also see ships coming and going on the Superior side as well. It was really, we had a natural breakwall here with the, what's called Park Point, a peninsula of land that stretches out into the harbor. And it really made for a well-protected harbor, you know, more than a century ago. So cutting that canal in there made a lot of sense for safety for boats to anchor as well.
Well, Adele, now I'm a little confused on the Port Authority's, let's say, ownership. Who do y'all work for? What's the agency behind the agency?
Sure. The Duluth Seaway Port Authority is actually kind of a legislatively created, a quasi-governmental body, if you will.
I love that.
It was actually created back in the mid-1950s in anticipation of the opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway in 1959. So some very astute business people here in the Twin Ports realized that a whole new kind of cargo would start moving once that seaway system was open and connected to the Great Lakes with all of the locks and all of that. So they put their heads together and determined that we had a lot of independently owned and operated terminals around the harbor already that were trading in lumber and in iron ore and in grain and coal. But they realized that there was going to be project cargo, general cargo, if you will, that came in bales and on pallets, needed heavy equipment and cranes to lift it out of boats. And those ships that were coming in were going to be saltwater ships, so we needed a different kind of terminal with a different kind of equipment. And we figured that to really build the infrastructure to do that, we needed to go to the state legislature. And they appropriated about $10 million in the 50s, coupled that with monies up here. They used a lot of dredge material to actually build the Clure Public Marine Terminal, and it opened just shortly before the arrival of that very first saltwater vessel in 59. So that was the seed for it planted here, and then through the years as we've grown the business, we get a small amount of revenue each year from property taxes through the county. We also then have our own dockage and wharfage fees, so anytime we do have a dock at a vessel, a salty here at our facility, or over winter layup time when we have some of the Lakers docked here for repair and maintenance work, there's all fees that go into that and tariffs that get charged. And then what people tend to not know about the Duluth Seaway Port Authority is that we own waterfront property and properties that we manage up at the Duluth Air Park. And so we do get rental revenues from the buildings that we own. And when we sell parcels of land, we, of course, take those monies and reinvest it. So we were charged with the responsibility of not only building maritime business, but bringing industrial development and trade development here to the whole region. So we really function in that regard as a development agency as well.
Quite a nice group.
It is a group, and we have a very small and lean staff, and when need be, we also lobby for legislative action on maritime issues here in Minnesota as well as in Washington, D.C. So we have a total staff of 11 people, and so there's an awful lot of work that keeps all of us busy.
Well, you are listening to The Roadhouse, and we are chatting with Adele Yorday. She's the Public Relations Director for the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, and she's doing her thing, sharing her skills of advertising and media and government relations with us on a opening week for the shipping season. Is this Great Lakes wide, or is it just Lake Superior?
Well, for those who happen to be looking at a map, when I first started here, I really had to reconnect with the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence Seaway, where that kind of runs through. And so when you talk about the opening of the season, we actually, as confusing as it is, have three dates. The Welland Canal, which is sort of that part of the seaway system that helps ships get around Niagara Falls, that part of the system actually opened on the 21st. We ended up seeing the other end, the Montreal locks, at the start of the seaway. Those opened up on the 23rd of March. And then here this morning, the Sioux locks, which are the set that connect Lake Superior to the lower lakes, those opened up this morning. So we all celebrate along the system. It's a 2,340-mile system, and we have a few different dates in there that people have top hat ceremonies out east, and we have you know, whistle blasts at this end, and now we're all waiting for the very first saltwater vessel to make its way all along that waterway.
That's right. And your group runs sort of a little contest on guess the date on that still?
We do. We do. So if your listeners are up for winning prizes online or on Facebook, we co-sponsor a contest each year with Visit Duluth. So if they go to visitduluth.com, there's a photo that they can click on to enter the first ship contest. And if they can judge when they think the very first salty will get here, date and time, there's a huge getaway package that they can win, and then a couple of runner-up packages. So the closer they get to the right time, the bigger the prize.
Oh, I don't suppose you'd get a ride on one of these.
Oh, I wish I'd. I've climbed aboard. I've been able to visit with an awful lot of the captains and crew members, but nope, I don't get to sail back out with them.
And how are the Sioux Locks doing nowadays? You know, I had traveled there last spring, took part in that impressive old operation. I understand there's only one lock that's big enough for the 1,000-footers.
1,000-footers, yep.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of conversation that some of your listeners may have read about. The Poe, P-O-E, lock is one of the locks there at the Sioux. It was built specifically to accommodate these 1,000-footers, and there's 13 of those that ply the Great Lakes. But even some of the smaller lakers have an easier time navigating through that particular lock when they're fully loaded. It really does get the lion's share of business, and there's been conversation, much like about our roads and a lot of other bridge structures, that the need to reinvest in infrastructure has really come to the forefront. If that lock were to go out of service, it really could start a ripple effect to not only impact shipping, but all of the cargoes that get carried, the industries that rely on the iron ore and rely on the coal that couldn't get that moving by road or rail. There's just not enough capacity. You can't move 68,000 or 70,000 tons of iron ore in trucks day after day after day to steel mills on the lower lakes, same with rail. And so there was a study done about what would happen if that piece of infrastructure failed. And so we're working to get some, there's a study being done, and to really evaluate what it would cost, how quickly it could get built to take one of the no longer functioning smaller locks to combine two of them and rebuild a second Poe-sized lock. They're talking about it as being twinning the lock, if you will, so that we wouldn't have to worry about that down the road.
Well, that's an impressive project from all angles.
It would be a huge project, and so much of the automotive industry and a lot of the other construction industries rely on the different types of steel that are manufactured at the different blast furnaces in this industrial region. It could have a crippling effect on all of that would take months and months to recover from. So I think that the study that just came out really looked at it much more strategically than just, oh, well, we just take those cargoes and put them on rail cars or put them on under the backs of trucks, and realized that was not feasible. So the Army Corps of Engineers is taking another look at that and then be able to go back to Congress and say, let's see what we can do about fully funding this.
Well, okay, that's certainly business and big business. Now I've got a few fun ones for you, Adele.
Sure.
Pirates. Do we still got to worry about pirates?
Okay. What would you like to know about pilots?
Well, no. Pirates. Somali pirates.
Oh, you know, I'd love to do an ad that says, you know, bring your cargo here, because there really is no concern about pirates. It really is one of the most safe and well-orchestrated waterway systems in the world. And, you know, it's a binational waterway, so we have Coast Guard enforcement on both sides of the waterway. So piracy is not anything that we have to deal with here the Great Lakes Seaway system.
Oh, good, good. That was a good answer. And, of course, the last one's a fun one. What do you think happened to the Fitz?
Oh, I tell you, there are so many stories and researchers, and I mean, it's been studied for how many decades already. I don't have a particular theory. It's one of those heartfelt stories, those of us in the industry, as much as we have divers around the lakes that love to explore shipwrecks and talk about what may have happened. For those of us who move the cargo, that probably goes down in history as just one of the really hard things because it's happened in our lifetime. And I don't really have a theory. I understand it was probably the perfect storm, not to overuse that metaphor, but so much has happened since that thinking to improve weather prediction, weather forecasting, real-time accurate information that pilots now have on board, that those captains can see how high waves are, what wind speeds actually are. There were a lot of improvements in safety and in weather forecasting that happened after that event, just with technology, the advances that we have today in technology. So, you know, if there was anything good to come out of that, the Fitz thinking it was that, you know, well, your guess is as good as mine on that one. I bet you've heard just as many theories.
I kind of enjoy the idea that it's a mystery that it took down with it.
Yeah,
right?
And we can all conjecture, and people have slides, and they point to, you know, were these things riveted? Did it have enough? Did it have too much? Was the load heavy? Should it have not left when it did? You know, pick one and go with that. Some talk about, even though there's the myth, that talk about the haunting of that ship, that there were certain people who felt there was just an aura aboard that ship. So, you know, it was an unfortunate occurrence,
yeah.
And it certainly harkens to remind us that these men and women who sail the lakes, while they're beautiful coming in and out of the ship canal, it really is a very dangerous occupation. Anytime you're on the water and storms come up and cargo shifts, all of those things are elements that happen. So we are very grateful, and we send those mariners off every spring with a blessing of the port at this end of the lakes, that, you know, they all return at the end of the season. So we do tip our hats to them and to the folks who keep those huge vessels running. It's quite an industry at this end of the lakes.
Yeah, thanks, Adele. And thanks for everything the Port Authority has done over the years and continues to do. And just a final parting plug for your group and where you can find out more information, and especially that all-important online shipping schedule.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. To find out more about the Port of Duluth Superior and the Duluth Seaway Port Authority, folks can go to duluthport.com. But if they're heading down this way and they want to check the schedules ahead of time, it's duluthboats.com. That shipping schedule is updated at least 2-3 times a day, so they can see that the Michipicoten is due in this weekend and the Burns Harbor is due in, and they can get a handle on maybe when that time frame is. And if they have their mobile phones with them and they would like to download an app or two, one of them is Marine Traffic and the other is Ship Finder. And they run about $3.99, pay the $3.99 and get the full bore, and they can track ships all over the Great Lakes Seaway system. It's really a fun, both of them are really fun apps.
All right, Adele Yorde with the Duluth Port Authority. Thanks so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Thanks. I look forward to meeting you next time I head up the road.
Thank you.